consider to England or France. You may like to gamble, you might like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're gonna have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Maybe a rock and roll addict dancing on the stage. Money, drugs at your command, women in a cage. You may be a businessman or some high degree thief. They may call you doctor or they may call you chief. You're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you are. You're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
You are listening to Radio Recovery or Recovery Radio, depending on how you want to look at it. We are an outreach of the Letar Recovery Center located at 531 South Main Street, Suite B in Moscow. Their phone number is 208-883-1045. Their hours are Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Their web address is letarrecoverycenter.org. And their email address is latarrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can also find them on Facebook. Radio Recovery's mission is to share with our community how recovery from addiction and mental health issues affects us all. To make our community aware of the recovery resources available in our area, and to share the personal stories of people in recovery, highlighting their experience, strengths, and hopes for continuing recovery. And I'm Johnny, and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. Got a couple of 24 hours under my belt, and God willing, and the creek don't rise, I'll do what I did yesterday, and maybe I'll stay sober till tonight. And who are you, young lady?
I'm Denise Miller, and I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and I've been in recovery as well for a few 24 hours, as you like to put it. And just really happy to be here and be a part of sharing with the community different resources and stories and giving some hope to Moscow and Pullman and whoever else happens to be listening later on podcasts.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Because we are available on iTunes. Just search for Letar Recovery Center and Radio Recovery. You'll show up there and you can download past podcasts. A real quick thing I wanted to go through, had the unfortunate situation, learned the suicide of a young fellow just recently who I know through a little bit of side work that I do when I'm not being a radio personality, and a really sad deal, one of those things where nobody seemed to see it coming. And I just want to remind people, this is a real stressful time of year. And if you're thinking about harming yourself, or if you think you know somebody who might be thinking about harming themselves, call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. It's 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-8255. It's a 24/7 service, and there will be somebody on there to talk to you. And locally, you can always contact U of I Mental Health Services at 208-885-6716, 208-885-6716. They have a program called QPR Suicide Prevention. And this is a great class for anyone to take, a program.
It is.
You have to call them to find out about it. But QPR stands for Question, Persuade, and Refer. And it's an evidence-based one-hour training program to help faculty, staff, and students to respond to someone in a mental health crisis and thinking about suicide. And participants will learn how to recognize the warning signs of suicide, offer hope, get help, and hopefully save a life. So I might throw those numbers out again at the end of the program here. That's not the only resource in town. The Latah Recovery Center has a plethora of programs and that deal with mental health. Also, recovery-related classes every day at noon. There's a Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's an open meeting. All are welcome. And that includes people that are in the NA program. There's also NA programs. And there's just a gazillion things. Give them a call at 883-1045 or drop in at 531 South Main Street and see what else they got going on there. And Denise, you brought a guest in with
you
today.
Today in the studio we have Lucas is our guest, and we're excited to have you here. So grateful that you could come on the show and share your story. I just want to throw in real quick, I know Lucas from CR at Real Life, and
What's CR?
Celebrate Recovery.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Lucas, thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Yeah, so can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, you know, I grew up locally here, Potlatch area, and, you know, basically when my parents were young, they got divorced, and just lots of challenges lay ahead in that, and my mom's dad was an alcoholic, so she, you know, and my real dad, I don't think she really found that that instability and chaos, and she found that more in my stepdad, mm-hmm. So, to say that growing up was a challenge is kind of an understatement, but you know, as soon as I got into high school, alcohol kind of became a problem. I guess at the time I didn't see it as a problem, you know. Yeah. It was more like the answer. Yeah. But and then, you know, I got into college, and then I started to experiment with, you know, various drugs and stuff, and it just didn't, just was a, you know, it was a temporary solution to a permanent problem. The joke is, I usually say that, you know, after I finally got out of my parents' house, I threw a party that lasted 10 years.
Yeah.
And needless to say, it came crashing down eventually. The party had to end. Mm-hmm. And that's when I finally, you know, came to CR in real life and really started to try and clean up my act and get sober.
And when was that you started?
Well, it was probably, I've been sober from alcohol now for about 4.5 years. So initially, I got in a big fight with one of my friends, and, you know, I was over drugs and alcohol, and I was like, you know, I have too many dreams and ambitions to keep doing this stuff. I'd gone to college. I'd gotten 3 business degrees. I was kind of a functional addict, I guess you could say.
Yes, yes.
I was, you know, college, you know, doing well in college is more of a way to cover my addiction, and, you know, I think everybody knew it. But, you know, I tried my best to hide it, and I think it was all out in the open.
Yeah, you know, because I've thought a little bit on that, you know, crash and burn addict like I was, and then the ones that are more functioning where you get up, you go to work every day, and, you know, and sometimes it's harder to see, I think, for the person, maybe even the people around, I don't know, but, that there's actually a real problem, because I suppose you were thinking to yourself, hey, you know, I'm going to school, I'm getting good grades.
Definitely.
Paying my bills. Were you paying your bills? I wasn't paying my bills. So eventually I was not paying my bills. So that's why I say that. But
yeah. Well, unfortunately for me at the time, I was living off student loans. And so mm-hmm. I just taken out more and more student loans. And then, gotcha. You know, that ended up catching up with me, and I'm still paying on those student loans.
Yeah.
And they're a thorn in my side, but they're also motivation mm-hmm. to, you know, try and be more successful and, you know, just make more money, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. So was going into recovery 4.5 years ago, is that something that you came to the choice on your own? Like what was happening before that you got into recovery?
Well, mainly, you know, I honestly thought that that drugs and alcohol were like, they gave me a competitive edge. You know, I was really shy. That's just kind of in my genes, is, you know, my family's not real social. And I just, I was always trying to, I wanted to be more social. I really did. And I, some, you know, most of the time I felt like a misfit. I didn't fit in. And I always was thinking that, you know, there was a drug out there that was going to fix me. And the analogy I use is I was always trying to do plastic surgery to my personality with drugs and alcohol. But I just had to love who I was and not keep trying to change myself. And, you know, I finally realized that, you know, well, I had tried every drug. I mean, I was running out of drugs to try. Yeah. And there wasn't one out there that was, you know, making me who I wanted to be. And I had really lost my identity and who I was. And people were starting to see me as the guy that always had a beer in his hand or, you know.
So it was kind of that search to become kind of like what you were wanting to be instead of just being, realizing you were good just the way you were.
Right. And, you know, the saying, I guess, be loved who you, for who you are, than, you know, for hated for who you're not, or however it goes. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I was just trying to fit in with the popular crowd, and I just need to, you know, in hindsight now, I just realize I need to be around people that love me, you know, more unconditionally mm-hmm. than, you know, how popular I was. 'Cause I just, I wasn't going to win that.
Yeah. I was going to say, so I feel that there are a lot of people that can relate to that. And that's part of why I was excited to have you on the show, because of what you shared briefly at CR. And I just think as teenagers and young adults, we go through that where we, you know, we see other people and we kind of, at least I did, kind of idolize.
Yeah, envy.
You know? Yeah. And so I want to know the people that they know. I want to look the way that they do, or whatever it is for each person. But I just feel like that can be a core issue in why people might drink or try drugs, you know?
Right.
The social side. I've heard it before.
And, you know, I made a fool of myself a lot more times than I ever made myself out to look good drinking. Mm-hmm. And I just, every time I just, you know, I was always of the philosophy of if one's good, more is better.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that never ended well.
The Lottl, yeah. The Lottl principle, as they call it, if a little is good, a lot will be better.
Right. I think that, yeah.
It was,
I
like
mean,
that joke,
Johnny agrees.
That
right?
joke we told the other
yeah,
day.
Yeah, that's
the,
what I was thinking.
That it goes, I hear they came up with a pill that cures addiction. I wonder what two will do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely.
That was yep. So my thinking as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So you made the decision, and then the action followed.
Yeah, I initially, you know, I did a lot of, I mean, at the time I was into Xanax and drinking, smoking weed, and I mean, it was whatever was really available. I woke up and I still had a bunch of Xanax. I ended up flushing like 60 pills of Xanax. And I was just like, this is over. I'm done with this. You know, I've gone down this road, you know, too far. It's not taking me anywhere. I've got too many dreams and ambitions to keep doing this. And I was sober, so I quit everything, alcohol and everything. And I'm not a big Facebook type of guy, but I actually got on Facebook and made it public known that, listen, I'm not doing any drugs or alcohol anymore. You know, if people who know me for that, listen, you will not know me for that anymore. Mm-hmm. And,
so you created some accountability for yourself as well.
Yeah, there was
being public with it. Mm-hmm.
This Eminem song, the lyrics really resonated with me. And he says, I'm going to be what I set out to be, without a doubt, undoubtedly. And all of those who look down on me, I'm tearing down your balcony. No ifs, ands, or buts. Don't try to ask him why or how can he. And that was like, that was kind of my motto. And it was just super powerful for me. And I lasted 9 months and then I never drank, but I slowly started to use drugs again. I had a prescription for Adderall, and that was just like, I slowly started to abuse that. And it wasn't long before I was, you know, going to parties, taking Molly and stuff like that. And it was just like, I was still lying to people saying I was sober, and there was just a lot of shame in that. And that probably went on for 2 years. I was still living behind a facade again, trying to hide it. And I wasn't actually actively involved in CR at the time. I had just kind of quit, and I think I started to go to church. And then finally I just made a New Year's resolution that I was going to go. I was going to join those people at right. CR, and it was the best decision I ever made.
There you go. So the difference between the first attempt for that 9 months and then now is a support group.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, being at CR, you know, I've become friends with a lot of different people, but mainly other people who can easily recognize if I was mm-hmm. high or, you know, on something. And not only that, but I'm good friends with them, so they're kind of my circle now. And so there's just really no hiding it anymore. You know, there was a lot of other people in my life before that were enabling it, mm-hmm. so to say. They would just look the other way and thought that, you know, they didn't know how to help me, really, like right. my parents and stuff. You know, as much as I tried to hide it, they knew. And I just don't think they knew how to go about, you know, helping me. So,
yeah, I thought I was so good at hiding it, but in retrospect, it's hysterical because you're yeah. not supposed to smell like whiskey at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
no. You know, and the it's cough medicine or it's
mouthwash.
Yeah, there yeah. you go. See, great minds think alike.
Yeah, you know the justification process that we come up with is great.
Oh yeah, so, rationalization is awesome. Yeah, and denial is not a river in Egypt.
Mm-hmm. No.
Once you get into a program, whether it's AA or Celebrate Recovery or NA or any of those programs, you know, something is going to happen which is vital, unexpected, and can really make you angry at times. And you meet people there who will call BS to you, to your face, right now. Those are the people that really care. We say in AA, we don't have to like you, but we have to love you. And I know people in the program like that. I won't necessarily, you know, hang out with them, you know, socially and do things. But man, if I got a phone call at 2 a.m. mm-hmm. and somebody said, you know, I really want a drink right now.
Guess where you're driving to?
I'd mm-hmm. be there in a minute for them. You not only in those relationships do you get somebody who's going to tell you how it is with a little hesitation and no reservation, but you also get somebody that you can depend on. And it allows us a chance to open up. And, you know, that's a hard thing. How do you deal with all that shame and regret? You know, you're never going to look down on me again. And, you know, 9 months later is not an unusual story, Lucas.
Right, right.
It's part of my yeah. story as yeah. well.
Relapse.
Yeah.
It's also big in the helping you learn and succeed. And
right, exactly, yeah. exactly. You get there when you get there, you know, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
The guy with the seeing the eyeball at the bottom of the drink glass, and the sponsor says, well, it was probably an olive, but whatever gets, you know, whatever gets you here, whatever's looking at mm-hmm. you. And that's good, though. That's good. And those are going to be the friends that, you know, you go forward with and, you know, experience a great life again instead of that hiding under the covers all the time.
So can you share some of the things that have just, I don't know, highlights of your attending CR?
Well, just in my first step study, actually on my second step study now, and I wasn't really sure, you know, what to expect doing a step study. I went in with a positive mindset. When I got there, it almost took a year before we did a step study. Mm-hmm. So I was really excited to do it. I was, you know, young in my recovery. You know, that's kind of what they promote, is, you know, you find a lot of healing in a step study. And so, you know, there's 4 books to it. The first book is like pretty, you know, pretty plain, pretty easygoing, plain Jane stuff. And you're like, you know, I don't know what the big thing is, but it's kind of lulling you into it.
Right.
And then the second book, you know, you make an inventory and, you know, you list out all the people that you did, you know, did wrong, and people that wronged you. And then in the third book, you know, you go about making amends to it. And for me, it was, you know, confronting my parents and you know, apologizing for, you know, all the drug abuse and, you know, kind of bringing, I guess, a bad reputation to my name and, you know, and them as well. For a long time, I never saw, you know, the collateral damage that right. it caused. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, it was really good to, you know, as we say, peel back a layer of the onion and make an amends. And now in my second step study, so it's like I had just made amends to a lady at our church that relationships are messy. And anyway, we were going to go on a date. It didn't work out. Anyway, there needed to be an amends made there. And so I just did that this last Sunday. And it was just a reminder of how great it feels. She was like, you know, she says, you know, basically took two to tango. I'm sorry as well. And so this whole time I've been carrying this burden, like, mm-hmm. oh my God. And it was just good. Now I don't have to have that haunt me. And because I feel like a lot of old regrets and stuff will haunt a person if they're not confronted.
Yeah. Right. And it's in AA, the program boiled down into a nutshell is be honest, clean house, trust God. You know, that house cleaning, that's something I still do every day. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done it in a formal, we call it, you know, fourth, fifth step, ninth step type deal, which is pretty much the same thing as what you just described, Lucas. You know, I've done several of them, and new stuff comes up. And not necessarily new as in it just happened, new as in, oh my God, I remembered something. Mm-hmm. You know, I tell people, yeah, during my being out there, things were a little fuzzy, mainly between like 1970 and 1998. But things clarify after a while. Things come back. I have made amends to people that are no longer living. I've made amends to people who I have no idea where they are, despite the fact that I, you know, made a honest search to try and find them. And then there's the amends I've had to make to myself, because I carry around a lot of guilt and a lot of shame, and I have to let that go, and I have to amend that story of myself that was caused by myself, you know, to be able to grow, to be able to get on with it.
And, yeah, move on.
Yeah. Move on and move through it.
Yeah. I also want to say that, because I'm starting to go through this myself, but so when you talked about, you know, you're paying on your student loans and, you know, that's something feels like it's going on forever.
Yeah, don't remind me.
Yeah, so sorry to bring that up. But there are things that have happened in during my use that are far-reaching, that are, you know, coming to light today that I have to figure out how to deal with and work on and clean up. And so I'm recognizing those things, you know, as they come. And it's rough stuff. It's financial, and it's not fun. So
no.
By you talking about that, I think that's really good, because there are some things for, you know, people who, you know, are in recovery or people who are not. There's some things that just eventually come up from the past, and they gotta get taken care of. I'm hoping to grow through it and learn a lot, and, you know, gain some strength and courage and all that. Get myself going better.
And as daunting as that can seem, you know, making that inventory list of your shortcomings, you know, that can be brutal. Mm-hmm. But here's my joy in the whole thing is the fact that I can do that now. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid of it anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm able to look at myself and honestly go, whoa, dude, mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a great thing. That's a freedom I never enjoyed before. Yeah. You know, covering up this lie with that lie and, you know, trying to keep them all straight and together.
My, what tangled webs we weave when we seek to deceive.
That's right. Exactly. Deceive.
My grandma used to say that. She also used to say, be careful what you wish for, which I've now learned was very important to know. So I'm cautious now. I remember back in the, in my 30s, I remember thinking, it'd be really great to not have to work, you know? It'd be great to just be at home. So, you know, I wound up, my addiction picked up a little bit, and I lost my business along with my home, and, you know, I wasn't working.
Well, you got halfway there.
Oh, yeah. I was like, wow, that 20 years later, my grandma told me that, and it's... Yeah, it makes sense now.
Yeah, it's like all those crazy AA axioms, you know, live and let live, mm-hmm. one day at a time. It all sounds like just madness when you first walk in the door, and then after a while, the light bulb starts coming on.
You're like, oh, that's where it applies.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Live and Let Live, for me, it was kind of interesting because later on I read something, and I don't know, it was in some goofy place, like on a gift for a telephone, and it said, how can you hold it against others because they sin differently than you
right,
do?
Right, exactly. No sin is no better, no worse than anyone else's.
That's right.
Yeah, that's been helpful to me. So...
you want to go to a little musical break here, and we can get a drink of water and rewind?
Yeah.
I'm going to try something new here.
Okay, what are we going to try?
I've got the music loaded differently. Awesome. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll work. Three,
sounds good.
Two.
Thank goodness I didn't have to start singing.
Oh, my. You might have
I might have to. So, okay. I hope everyone... is getting ready for the holiday season.
Yeah, keep singing for a minute there.
Right.
And
we're hoping for safe travels. What else, Lucas? What else would be positive, Doug?
Great presents under the tree.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Seeing family and friends. Yeah, we're going to have to carry this for a minute. So do you have family that lives around here?
Yeah, all my family is basically local.
Nice.
And probably going up to Deary area, which is usually fun because they have more snow.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, the more you get out of Moscow going in any direction, there's usually more snow, especially that way.
Yeah, so definitely my nieces and nephews really love that. Mm-hmm. And so we go out there and play snow, throw snowballs, play on the snowmobiles, sled down some hills. That's
nice.
Always fun. Still bring out the inner kid.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. So nieces and nephews, how old are they, like younger or varying in age?
I got two nephews. One's 9 and the other one, I think he just turned 5.
Nice.
And they're full of energy. And then my niece, I think she's 4 years old.
Oh, my goodness,
she's
super cute too.
Yeah, she's like into cheerleading and she's like really femme. And so it's really cool to see him grow up. And
that's awesome.
And I grew up riding motorcycles. So I was kind of an adrenaline junkie.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've all got motorcycles too. And it's good to see that I wasn't the only crazy adrenaline junkie in the family. So they're kind of picking up where I left off.
Yeah, I heard somebody say once throttle therapy. And when I was in recovery, I went out on the lake, did some jet skiing, and that was very therapeutic. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well,
good.
I think we're ready now. Let's see if it works this time. And we're off.
I wear my wartime coat in the windowsill. enough of childhood. I've had enough of graves. I've had enough of living. I've had enough of dying. I've had enough of smiling. I've had enough of crying. I've taken all the high roads. I've squandered and I've saved. I've had enough of childhood. I've had enough of.
And we are back on KRFP in beautiful Moscow, Idaho. I'm Johnny, she's Denise, and our guest in the studio today is Lucas, who's going through the recovery program with Celebrate Recovery out at Real Life Church. And we're going to ask Lucas a little bit about going forward. Now that he's in the program, working it, where do you see yourself going from here, Lucas?
Well, like I touched on, I went through my first step study. And after you do that, you can become a sponsor. So now I'm sponsoring a couple guys. And so moving forward, I feel like I'm still going to continue to work the program and be a sponsor. I feel like I'm really approachable, and my story's not like a story that not anybody can relate to. You know, like I feel like a lot of people relate to it. So moving forward, yeah, just trying to be a good positive influence for other guys.
What's that like? What's it like to sponsor somebody?
Well,
for you.
Right. At first I was like, man, I don't know if I can be a sponsor. I can't fix somebody's problems, you know, but it's nothing like that. You know, it's more... just being there and making sure that they're following through with the steps and doing their work in the books, and just being, you know, someone there to support them too, you know, if they need to talk. And usually try to meet once a week and go over their inventory, you know, especially at the crucial parts of the step study. And I do Toastmasters. If you guys are familiar with that, it's kind of a public speaking thing where you work on that.
Yeah, sure. You
know, standing up in front of people and talking. Nice. And I wasn't very social, so that was one of the things that I did to try and help chip away at my anxiety and shyness, and it's really helped me a lot. And they help, you know, to focus on when you're speaking that you don't say ahs and ums a lot, but that's obviously work in progress.
I guess really? I'm gonna have to go to that too.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
When I take these programs after they're done and load them up. By the way, you can, if you want to hear a rebroadcast of this, you can go to iTunes and search for Latar Recovery Center, and it'll pop up there. But when I go through these programs and listen to them for the editing, at first I started trying to and you knows and delete them. I found out I was really spending about 6 hours editing a, you know, 50-minute long bit of audio. So I just kind of let it go at this point and try to be conscientious of it. It's hard enough for me just not to swear like a wounded Marine, which, you know, I am known to do from time to time. So it just takes a little time and a little practice. But, you know, we as we say here, we practice radio progress, not radio perfection. So, yeah. So you're going to go on with that. What about personally? What's your life look like going forward?
Well, like I said, I had my business degrees, and then I moved on to start my own business, which has been a blessing. And that was, you know, something that purely God had called and put on my shoulders to go out and do. And I feel like, you know, he's calling me to, right now I'm getting comfortable just being a one-man show, but I feel like he wants me to grow and just really be a testament to what, you know, the power of God and what he can do in your life. If you just choose to take his hand, he can lead you to much greener pastures. And that's where I was when I was hit rock bottom. I was just finally, you know, I was just so broken and just in such a dark place. And God was just reaching out the entire time and said, listen, if you just take my hand, I will lead you to greener pastures. I've got such great things in store for you. And I was just refusing him for the longest time. But the darker it gets, the brighter the light shines. And that fateful night, I just finally took his hand and it's just changed my life, accepting God into my heart and just really calling on him as my higher power.
That's not too far off of my story, you know. Mm-hmm. It was,
me too.
I just asked God for help, and then everything else just started falling in place, you know, kind of almost despite my actions leading up to it. You know, it didn't seem to matter what I did. That, you know, that power grabbed me by the shoulder and pulled me out of the deep water and onto dry land and said, go that way. Mm-hmm. And I went.
Yeah, it's funny how it works out. I find myself spending about just as much time as I used to seeking, you know, drugs as I do now seeking my relationship in God.
Yeah, and, you know,
it's working out well.
When you do get in, and for those, you know, folks out there that might be listening to us that, you know, are a little frightened of the G word, if you're just willing to believe that somebody else believes by watching, you know, their actions and what they do and the progress and successes in their lives, you know, you can overcome that fear of the G word. It took me a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, I still refer to it to the God of my non-understanding. That really has more to do with my humility than being cheeky or cute with the phrase. Because whatever God is to you, is going to be as unique as a snowflake. You know, everyone's relationship You know, you may go through the Christian Bible, you may be a Buddhist, you may be, you know, whatever religion or subset of religion or, you know, whatever dogma you follow, it's still going to be different than the guy sitting next to you in the pew at church on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, when you go into AA or NA, no one's shoving anything down your throat, so
right,
it's your
exactly.
choice.
Exactly.
They just want to help you, you know, be able to get sober and, you know, just be supportive and help you walk forward.
That's yeah. right.
And the rest, you know, will come as it comes.
It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's a good life. It's a good life.
It
and, you know, why wouldn't you want more?
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't, you know, I, when it came to drinking it, you know, I wanted more and more and more all along. Now that life's getting better, I can use that same mindset to say, yeah, I want more. The difference being now I'm really willing to work for it. I'm willing to show up here at 2 minutes after one to do a 1 o'clock radio program. And I feel bad about that, but,
I've learned how to load the news now because you've guided me to.
Well, there you go. Yeah. There you go. It was God's hand, really.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even have to watch the video this time.
Oh, I am so impressed. I really
am. Denise is learning how to use a computer.
She is really just storming her way into the 20th century.
Watch out, world.
She's going to do it. So you got anything else you'd like to talk about, Lucas, that's on your mind or going on with your life or your program?
You know, I guess the one thing that I was going to touch on there is a lot of times I'll share my testimony and stuff, and a common question that people ask is, well, what was the best drug you ever did? And I can look them straight in the eyes and be honest now and say, Jesus.
Exactly.
I mean, I'd rather get drunk on God, high on life, than go back to my old ways and destruction and despair.
That's an excellent point. And I think that feeds into the whole idea that, you know, there is hope in sobriety. I mean, I remember when I first got into the program, first got sober, I lamented I'll never be able to have fun again.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
from the time I was maybe 14 years old, everything that was fun revolved around either drinking or getting high.
Mm-hmm.
Every adventure with my buddies started out, let's get all messed up, and then, mm-hmm. you know, dot, 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 you know, add your tragedy here. For a while, it worked. For a while, it was fun. And then it stopped being fun. I kept trying to make it fun, but
I remember
it didn't work.
And we've talked about this a little bit. The first year and two in my program at Weeks in Vitri, we would all get together with our small groups and we would try to figure out what could we do on the weekends that didn't cost much or was free that would be healthy because, you know, we were all on probation. And so, you know, and kind of just rebuilding. And then after my program ended 3 years ago, you know, it was even more, okay, what can we do that's family friendly, that will be healthy for us? And there's a lot of things that are in the community to do. I mean, you just kind of, again, Google it. And, you know, you can pull up the stuff that's going on. And those things are during the day, normal hours, or in the evening, you know, so you still get to bed at a decent time or, you know. And you don't have to take drugs to stay up all night and do stupid stuff. So, you know, like it takes a little bit of time for anybody who's new in recovery to figure out these new things and new people to be around and stuff like that. And I do like that a lot, Lucas, how you talked about, you know, because you do have to make it known to people. You can't be mad at them if they come up and they're like, hey, you want to do what we did last weekend? And you haven't made it known that you're doing something different, you know.
And that's for me, that's like a really important. A hard part of it all.
Yeah.
Is because, you know, for me, I was good friends with these people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny because when the drugs dried up and I, for me, I was the one that was really mainly acquired the drugs. So I guess I was kind of a drug dealer.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, as soon as, you know, the drugs dried up and they weren't around, it's amazing how many people quit coming around. And so it was just kind of an aha moment. You know, I had to go through it. But then to see that really our friendship was just based on the substance abuse or the substance. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, once I didn't have it anymore and I wasn't handing it out, then, it's amazing how many people weren't hanging around and weren't my friends anymore. So it kind of all just took care of itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a, you know, that's a disappointing thing too. You know, I guess I was fortunate enough that, you know, a lot of the people I knew, they stopped doing dumb stuff, some before, some after I did. But a lot of them, we're able to, you know, we've stayed in touch, we're still friends, and we all kind of went through these different phases mm-hmm. together. But on the other hand, you know, there were a lot of people that, you know, it's like, I just told the story about my friend Mark, who I went to his house when I was sober, went to his house for a bachelor party for a mutual friend.
Yeah, this one's
and,
good.
I came early to help set up, you know, a little service work there and help him get things together. He came to me and he says, you know, I know you're not drinking anymore. He says, but I got some Coke in the bedroom if you're interested.
Yeah.
And I had to kind of explain to him that, you know, that's really not, you know, part of my program anymore. You know, it's kind of like I'm leaving all that behind.
Yeah, I'm not trying to do a cross addiction or anything like that.
Yeah,
it's all bad for me. Sorry.
And as a matter of fact, I spoke with him the other day. He had bumped into a mutual friend who, oddly enough, was the person who we were throwing the bachelor party for. And I talked to Mark, and he's got 18 years now.
That's awesome.
In the program, and he had gotten a DUI, and he called me up in tears one day, and it's like, what's this AA program all about? Because he knew that event kind of flipped the light switch mm-hmm. for him into realizing that you know, maybe he had a problem with alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, you know, it can be that you can't drive your car and you got to walk, or it can be that you lost your job, or it can be that you lost your spouse and your kids. It can be like a variation of different kinds of things where you go, you know, I do know that one person and they did something. Maybe I should give them a call.
Right. Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why it's important that people know what we're doing and that we can be honest about it.
Yeah, drugs and alcohol are terrific solvents. They dissolve friendships, marriages, families, jobs. Mm-hmm. All kinds of stuff
home.
Like that. That's right. That's right. And I still have my big bag of yets. I didn't lose my house. I didn't lose my car. Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That's good. Again,
you know, my disease is sitting over in the corner of the studio right now doing push-ups, just waiting for me to take that first drink.
Yeah.
And then we'll be off and running again. But knock on wood, maybe that won't have to happen to me today.
After the show, I'll go step on him.
Give him a kick in the frogs.
Yeah,
there
I'll take care of that.
Well, you know what? We're getting to the end of mm-hmm. our hour here, and I want to thank Lucas for coming on and sharing your story.
Absolutely.
And your experience, strength, and hope for a better life and being a better member of the community. And thank you very much for your time and your sobriety. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to be here, and it was fun.
Yeah.
Good. And Denise, thank you, and you know, for being an awesome co-host, as always.
Yep, you as well, Johnny.
Thank you. And I want to wish you two, in particular, and our listening audience out there, hope you have a very Merry Christmas. We will be back on the air next week.
Yep, we will. We're not skipping
and,
a beat.
We'll probably talk a little bit about what you might want to do for New Year's if you want to do something safe and sane.
Yep, and because you can definitely have a great New Year's without doing anything that would jeopardize your recovery.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So, as we say at the end of this program, if you think you have a problem with alcohol or drugs, you do.
Thank you for listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP Moscow Pullman.